Hi everyone, this is Dawn Clem and you are on my podcast, Milkweed and Monarchs. In the summer of 1980, we had already been informed, all the corpsmen that had been working at Balboa Naval Hospital, that our last year as an enlisted person would be spent overseas, or if you were a male corpsman, you may be stationed on a ship. The female corpsmen were not yet allowed to go on ships. Those rules have changed, and women have been on ships now for at least 20 years. But during the time when I was in, we weren't allowed to be on a ship. I'm kind of glad about that. So we had the opportunity. It was just like when I was leaving hospital core school training. You could pick three duty stations that you were interested in going to. So I picked, and you could go, like we had a chance of going to Japan, Okinawa, could go to the Philippines, we could go to Guam, we could go to anywhere off the West Coast where we had a base, Hawaii. Or we could go off the East Coast. And so we had some duty sites in Europe. There was one in Naples, Italy. There was one in Germany. And then there was also islands. I think we had one in the Azores off from Portugal. And then there was also Iceland. So I looked through all my options. And the packet that came for Iceland just fascinated me. Right away, it was like hook, line, and sinker. I got to go see this place. I am an outdoorsy kind of gal, so I love being outdoors. And Iceland appealed to that part of me. It showed the whole map of Iceland. It showed all the natural sites to see. They had a geyser there. They have a volcano there. They have, huge fishing ports. And they had the puffins there on the islands. They showed the capital where the president lived. They have a president there. And it was actually a female when I was in. And they just, and there's tons of natural waterfalls everywhere. Well, I took one look at that brochure and I'm like, yeah, that's where I want to go. All of my friends are like, are you crazy? Most of them were trying to go for the warmer weather places, you know, like Hawaii. But all that being said, you still had to pick three options and not necessarily were you going to get your first choice. And most of the men were actually going to be put on a ship, which is unfortunate. But I picked Iceland first, and then I picked Naples, Italy second. And the third choice I picked was the Azores, the islands outside of Portugal. And sure enough, I got my first pick. I got Iceland. And everybody said, yeah, because nobody wants to go to Iceland. And you're crazy for wanting to go to Iceland. I didn't care. That welcome package was all I needed. They have postcards in there, and I still have the postcards. I still have the map that they sent me. I mean, it was just one of the coolest places to actually be stationed. And I explored that whole entire island, believe me. I got my money's worth out of that duty station. But nonetheless, in October of 1980, I took my plane flight from San Diego to New York. And then from New York, I got on Icelandic Air and traveled to Reykjavik Island, or Iceland, sorry. I was kind of petrified when I got off the plane because I'm like, oh boy, what have I done, right? I didn't know anybody there at all. So it was like starting all over again. And I had become very comfortable in San Diego in a routine. So this was going to be a challenge for me, no doubt. Well, there were like 4 to 6 other people. I can't remember. It was a low number of people that were traveling with me. And when we got off the plane, they had a bus there from the Naval Air Station in Keflavik. We landed in Reykjavik. Reykjavik is the capital of Iceland. And Keflavik is about 40 minutes away from Keflavik. So the bus was there. We all got on the bus. Of course, I had my sea bag. That's how we travel. And, you know, I'm loading up, getting on there, thinking, oh, Lord, what have I done? Now, it's October, and Iceland is very similar to Alaska. It has the northern lights. It's the land of the midnight sun. So in the winters, like December and January, you might have 2 hours of daylight. And conversely, in the summer, in June, July, and August, you had 20 hours of daylight or 22 hours of daylight and 2 hours of nighttime. So it was October, and it was starting to get to the point of darkness most of the time. So we get on the bus, and by the time we got to the base, it was dark, and I think it was like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm like, ugh. They said, you're going to go into the intake area where they greet new people coming over, and you'll get instructions on what your next steps are going to be. So they drop us off at the intake area, and they met us there and brought us in. And they said, the first thing that you're going to get issued is a parka. I'm like, a parka? You mean they're actually going to give us a coat? They said the winters are very cold here. Even partly because it's dark all the time, but partly because we really don't have a lot of trees here, and the wind blows off the water, and it's very, very cold. So we want to make sure that you are going to be kept warm if you have to be outdoors. I'm thinking, oh, what does that even mean, if you have to be outdoors, right? So they're like, okay, let's try a parka on you. All right. You already know I'm short, right? This is going to be a challenge. So they try the first parka on me, way too big. They try the second parka on me. I feel like the Three Little Bears, right? The first one was too big. The second one was okay. But the third one was the one that fit the best. Even though it still came down to my knees and my fingertips barely showed from underneath the sleeves. But they said, this is as small as we get, so this is going to be the best we can do for you. And I'm like, that's fine, you know, whatever. I'm not going to complain about it. So everybody gets fitted. They give us extra uniforms, too, that they thought we were going to need while we were there. And then they gave us our room assignments because we were all going to the barracks. Now, I'd been living in San Diego for 2 years. And if you listen to the beginning of my podcast, then you're aware of the fact that I never actually made it inside the barracks. I was stationed in the basement because they didn't have any rooms. And then I ended up being able to live off base in an apartment. So for the last 2 years, I've been living in an apartment. Now I come here and I'm going to have to live in the barracks. The barracks is nothing more than a dormitory. and fine, really, but it's just not something I was used to. I had been living completely independently, almost like I wasn't even in the military. So now here I am. I gotta go have a roommate. So I haul my sea bag over to the barracks where they tell me to go, and my room number. I have my room number, and I knock on the door. I have a roommate. Nobody answers, so I get the key. I get in there. I bring my sea bag in, and I was trying to get unpacked, but I wanted to meet her first just to make sure that I wasn't taking up space or, you know, what she thought, because she had been living there. Finally, she did show up. I'd been there for about an hour. And she came in. She said her name was Kim. She was about as unhappy to see me as I was to see her. And I think she was upset because I was a grade lower than her. She was a petty officer E5, and I was a petty officer E4, E meaning enlisted. So she's like, why do I have to be with somebody like you? And she had been telling everybody that she knew who I was, that I was stationed with her in San Diego. I'm like, I don't know you. I don't ever remember working with you or seeing you anywhere. And so, as you can imagine, we didn't exactly get off on the right foot. It was not good. Then the second thing that happened is she wanted me to be on the top bunk. Another hilarious thing. Because here I am, the short one. But she'd been living in that room by herself, so she just opted for the bottom bunk. So I'm like, okay, yes, I'm not going to complain. How could I complain? I was basically invading her space. So I started out in the barracks on the top bunk with a roommate that really didn't want a roommate. And I was just hoping and praying that it was all going to turn out for the best. She was helpful, though. She got used to me. And after a couple days, she started giving me tips. And she actually walked me to the clinic the first day that I was due to show up. So I was going to be working in an outpatient clinic. This was a whole new setup for me. I had been working inpatient for the last 2 years. And I had no idea how to be in an outpatient clinic. So I was definitely nervous about that, thinking, what the heck? And don't forget, I know I always say this, but I only had 10 weeks of actual education, written education, and the rest of it is really just on-the-job training. So I was nervous. But I get to the outpatient clinic, and I discovered right out of the gate that we had one medical doctor, so an internist. We had one OB doctor, a female physician. We had a pediatrician who, the pediatrician and the obstetrician were married. Both of them were fabulous, and I loved the internist too. They were all great. And so those were basically the specialties that we had for the clinic. And what my job was going to be was doing sick call. So that was usually, most of the time, that was the enlisted patients. I mean, enlisted staff. But there were times when the spouses would come in of the enlisted staff. And it was a Naval Air Station, so we were stationed with the Air Force there. So I would also have people coming in from the Air Force. And a lot of the enlisted people that were there, or the officers, were married, and that's why we needed an OB doctor, because there were a lot of pregnancies up there, and we also needed the pediatrician. So it was pretty full service for what we thought we would need up there, because most of us were healthy that went up there. So they said, Dawn, you're going to start sick call. You're going to learn how to do sick call. I'm like, sick call. What does that even mean? Okay. So how it worked was you got a form for each person that you would see. And I would screen them when they came in for sick call. They'd come up to the front desk, just like you're in a doctor's office. They would check in and they would let you know the reason why they were there. Like somebody might come in and say, I've had a fever for 24 hours. I've had I have a bad cold and I don't seem to be getting over it. I'm having problems with my urine. It's burning when I go to the bathroom, that kind of thing. So then I would get the problem sheet and the patient, and I would bring them back to the room, the examination room. And then it was up to me to go over all the systems with them, do a full check up on them of everything. So I'd get their vital signs, I'd get their weight, I'd get their height. Then I would listen to their lungs, I would listen to their heart, I would look at their hands and feet to see if there was any swelling. I would look inside their mouth and make sure they didn't have a red throat or white spots on their throat or tongue. I looked in their ears, even though I did not know what I was doing when I looked in their ears, really. I mean, I'm good at it now, but at that point, I really did not know. So, and I would listen to their belly to see if there was any problems with that, and I'd go through every system with them on that sheet. Then I would get done, and the very next thing I would do is just run down the hall to the internist. The internist's name was Dr. Bjornsson, and Dr. Bjornsson was Icelandic. He was in the Air Force, but he was an internist, so he was there to help us. And so I would give him the sheet, I would tell him about the patient, and then I would go over the head-to-toe assessment that I had just done on the patient. And he would go, Dawn, it doesn't seem like there's anything wrong with them. I said, I know, but they're here because they say there's something wrong with them. So he told me so many times, Dawn, they're probably depressed. We have so many people that are depressed on this base. It's unbelievable. And he said a lot of it was because it was dark most of the time in the winter. And he said that we're just ramping up right now. So you're going to see a lot of this kind of stuff. So I'm like, okay, you know. So I would do sick call in the morning, and then in the afternoon, a lot of times I might get staged or pulled to go over and work in the pediatric well baby and pediatric clinic, or I might go over and do labor and delivery with the female physician. So I was just learning so much while I was there, an incredible amount. It's just so hard to believe the on-the-job training that I got there. It was unbelievable. So then I had been doing that probably. I did it all through the winter months. And it really wasn't so bad. And I was learning and I was starting to really like the physicians a lot. I mean, it was just such a big change from San Diego, as you can imagine. But I signed up on my off days for every USO tour that I could. And that's really what kept me going. I absolutely explored everything I could possibly see in Iceland. There was not one stone unturned, I'm telling you. So I actually went to the whale plant where they would break down the whales after they got them. And I saw the blubber and I saw them scalping it, skinning it. I mean, that was one of the most fascinating things I've ever seen. When I first got there, Hekla, the volcano was erupting. So I took a bus tour, not close to it, but close enough where you could actually see the lava flowing down. I went to more than one natural waterfall in the country. And the one I loved the best was called O'Fairfoss. It had a natural bridge, and there was a waterfall on the top, and then there was a waterfall on the bottom, and you could walk across the natural bridge. I still have all my pictures from that. In Reykjavik, they had what they called a ditch, and it was just a big swimming hole from the geothermal water plant. So the water was naturally warm from geothermal, which is underground. And that's how they had all of their electricity and everything. It was all their power was generated through geothermal. And I would take the buses out to just out into the country. It was such a fascinating country. I'm telling you, it was so fascinating. And you would see the old wooden racks with they would have fish drying on it, just hanging up. I went to Thing Valur, which is their parliament. And when I was there, they actually had a female president. So all of that was so great. I would go into Reykjavik on the weekends, and they had like a big, huge farmer's market. And so I would spend a lot of time there. I bought a lot of souvenirs there. I mean, it was just so great. It was really great. And I still have a lot of things from there. And it really was one of the best things that I ever did in my life. I'm so glad I got stationed over there, really. But after I had been working in the clinic for about 6 months, they came to me and they said, "Okay, we got other people coming in, and you've mastered the clinic. We're going to put you inpatient." I go, "Really?" Not that I cared, but the inpatient was like 12 beds, I think. And we did minor surgery up there, you know, hemorrhoidectomies, that kind of thing. And we didn't do anything like tonsillectomies or anything like that. We did small procedures, minor. So I could go into the operating room sometimes, and I could just take care of the patients, you know, start IVs, hang IV fluids, take vital signs, change their beds. I was kind of bored because I was used to being in. The clinic was actually pretty busy, but I was really busy when I worked in the hospital at Balboa Naval Hospital in San Diego. So this was kind of like a cakewalk for me. It was so boring that I finally decided I got to do something else here. So I reorganized the whole entire clean utility room with all the supplies. It was awesome. And they're like, "We want you to be the senior corpsman here," which is like the charge nurse. I'm like, "No, I don't want to do that. I'm not interested in that. I'm just here to work, get the experience. That's all I really care about." They're like, "Oh, brother, Dawn." They kept trying to nominate me to be the senior corpsman. And then they nominated me to be corpsman of the month while I was up there too. I'm like, "Ugh, I hate all that kind of stuff. I'm not a big in the spotlight kind of gal. I'm more of a behind the scenes kind of gal. I don't mind helping. I don't mind working. I feel satisfied with the work I do. I don't need to get the attention for it." So I struggled with that. But when I was working inpatient, my on-call part, because you're always on call, my on-call part was being in the emergency room. So I was like, "Okay." And it really wasn't so bad. That was kind of exciting. In the emergency room, I could order all the tests because the doctors weren't there. So if somebody came in complaining of burning when they urinate, I'd run a urine on them. If somebody came in saying that they were tired all the time, I'd run a hematocrit on them. I was doing all this kind of stuff. Somebody came in complaining of shortness of breath, and I ordered a chest x-ray on her, and it actually came back, not pneumonia, but it showed that she actually had a bleb on her lung. So I was so excited about that I got to call the doctor and tell him, "Hey, there's something really weird about this one. You're going to have to come and see it." So that was, you know, that's awful that I'm excited about something like that. Everything was going okay. I was getting used to it. We're getting into the spring and summer. Where all of us used to go for entertainment was the Chief Petty Officer Club. And in the Chief Petty Officer Club were slot machines, which I absolutely loved. Loved them. And the other thing was the best restaurant on the island, as far as I was concerned. The food was amazing there. So a lot of times people would go in, they'd go to the Chief Petty Officers Club, they'd have dinner, they'd have drinks, they'd go to the slot machines, and they'd continue to drink. And it was the spring, I think it was March. Now, it's still dark out. It's not starting to get light. That doesn't come until later on, June and July and August, where it's light all the time. It's icy because it's cold out. And they're big, huge boulders. They're not just rocks on the side of the road like gravel. No, you're walking over these big, huge boulders. Most of the time, the enlisted staff was had been imbibing or drinking at the Chief's Petty Officer Club. And so when they left the club, they were intoxicated. I cannot tell you how many people slipped on those rocks and ended up with a broken leg. Many of them. But one particular night when I was on call, the same thing happened. The man had slipped on the rocks and fallen, and he couldn't even make it back to the base. So we had to get people over there to get him up, to bring him in. And we get him in, and we take an x-ray of his lower leg and ankle. And the doctor called me and said, "Dawn, he's going to have to go to Reykjavik." I go, "What?" He says he's broken his ankle in two different places and he's going to have to go to surgery. I'm going to call the surgeon over there and they're going to be expecting you, but you're going to have to drive the ambulance to the hospital in Reykjavik. I'm like, no, this cannot be happening. I shouldn't even be laughing. But if you could have seen that ambulance, I mean, it was an old-time ambulance, okay? It was not anything like our modern ambulances now. It was a square box. And I needed a step stool to get up into the driver's seat of the ambulance. And I had to have a pillow behind my back and I had to sit on a pillow in order to drive. And it's dark out. I had two other corpsmen with me, but they were in the back with the patient. I had no idea how to get to the hospital in Reykjavik, but both of them had been there before, so they were going to just keep an eye out for me and let me know. And so there I go, driving down that long two-lane highway. So the highway from Reykjavik to Keflavik was just a two-lane highway. It was not anything with exits on it. It was not anything with entrance ramps, with bridges. There weren't four lanes. It was one lane coming towards you and you going the other way. So as you can imagine, I'm like, oh my God, I'm driving an ambulance in the pure dark night to Reykjavik Hospital where nobody speaks any English. This is a scary business. But the guys behind me were like, "Dawn, you can do it. It's going to be fine. Just keep going. Just keep going straight. It's just a straight shot into Reykjavik and we'll tell you when to turn and how to get to the ER. So I'm like, okay, there I go, straight down the road. I will never forget it for as long as I live. No way. It's so funny when I think about it now because my youngest daughter is actually in the middle of paramedic training and she's in an ambulance all the time. She drives an ambulance like there's nobody's business, right? But And she loves it. But I really was not an emergency kind of gal. And me driving that old ambulance into Reykjavik was a bit traumatic for me. But nonetheless, we made it in there. It took me about 45 minutes. We get to the hospital, and we went right straight to the emergency room. They were expecting them. They came out with the, we called it gurney, so the stretcher. And we put the patient on the stretcher, and then they took him away. And it was the weirdest thing because not one person could communicate to each other. Not one person could communicate. They were Icelandic, and we were American, and there were no words between any of us. And I felt kind of sorry for that guy because he was going into a foreign hospital, you know. But the doctor had called ahead and spoken with the surgeon. Our internist, Dr. Bjornsson, was from Iceland, and so he could speak both English and Icelandic, and so that worked to our advantage, and we were very lucky to have him there. And he had already done all the preliminary calling. When we were driving back, they made me drive the ambulance back too, even though the patient was gone. They're like, this is good for you. You need to know how to handle the ambulance. This isn't going to be the first time and only time you ever have to drive the ambulance. But I'm happy to report it really was the first and only time I ever had to drive that ambulance. But wow, what an experience Iceland was. What an amazing experience. And the last note I'll just make about Iceland is the Aurora Borealis, or the Northern Lights. I got to see them the whole time I was up there, and they were spectacular. They were so spectacular, and it was just one of the best things. And traveling all over that country and just meeting the people and seeing everything that was about that country made that whole year worth it for me. Originally, I had thought that I was going to be there until January. That would have been the end of my tour. But they said, since you only have 3 months left, Dawn, we're going to give you an early out. So I got to get out of the Navy in October of 1981 after being in Iceland for a whole year. And it was bittersweet. It was bittersweet, but it was great. And it's a great memory to look back on. Thank you for listening to my story today. I hope you enjoyed it. It's a really happy memory for me. And so it was kind of fun to be able to look back on that again. It's August 1st today, so I am going to be starting the one-to-one interviews in the studio. I don't know if I'll be able to get on YouTube right away, but at least I will be interviewing people. So it won't just be me talking on here. Coming up, I'm hoping to start on August 15th. I think that's a good date to get started. And I would love to hear from any one of you if you would like to be interviewed, or even if you just have a story that you would like me to share. Please go on my website, milkmon.com. That's MILKMON.com, all one word. At the very bottom, there's a section that you can fill out, or you can also find my contact information, and you could either email me or call me. I would love to hear from you. Until the next time.